This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins me in studio. He's a celebrated award-winning local author, historian, cartographer. He's online at rickbritton.com. And we're continuing our exploration of the 25 most significant Civil War battles that were fought here in Virginia during the Civil War. Today, we'll talk about the Battle of Trevilian Station in June of 1864. But before we do that, you have a class at the Senior Center that is kicking off tomorrow night, right?
That's right. It starts tomorrow. The first class is at 6. It's Virginia History 101, and what we're doing is we're trying to tackle a lot of the big topics in early Virginia history. So Native Americans, tobacco, slavery, the Yorktown campaign, the last major campaign of the Revolutionary War here, the presidency of George Washington, and architecture in the Jeffersonian period. And we've got a lot of great speakers. I'm the host. I organized it. I'm the first speaker. I'll be talking about the Monacan Indian Nation tomorrow. And if people are interested, we've also got some folks. We have a professor coming up from William & Mary to lecture about tobacco. That's her specialty. The lady who's talking about slavery happens to be one of the research historians over at Monticello, and that's one of her specialties. Two of the editors.
That's Senator?
No, that's actually another one. It's Lenny Sorensen.
Oh, yeah, of
who
course.
Works with Senator.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely.
They're both absolutely
great.
Amazing
team.
And you've had Lenny on
there.
on your show.
Senator, I believe, yeah.
Yeah.
And Lenny.
You've had them both on your show.
Amazing work that they're doing up there. It really is.
And this next gentleman, too, Ed Lengel, one of his specialties is the Yorktown campaign.
He's been on the show, too, yeah.
Many, many times.
He's
really
some smart
guy.
People. Yeah.
Some really smart people. So it's going to be great. So if you're interested, you can come on by to the class, and we'll get you all fixed up. If you want some more information, you can call the Senior Center Travel Office. And that's 974-6538.
You know, the two biggest things I think of that I find most interesting about the Battle of Yorktown towards the close of the Revolutionary War.
Right.
Number one, that it was the French that made it all possible.
Yeah.
We won because of the French.
Yeah.
And I think most Americans don't today. They're not really aware of that.
The army besieging the British, half of the army was French.
I mean, they got
and
here.
And then the French Navy blockaded them in.
Right at the opportune moment, just in time.
They sure did.
And really helped us win that war against the British.
Yeah,
and
they absolutely did.
To really win. And plus, I find it fascinating that, you know, we're sort of brought up thinking that that brought the revolution to a close, but the British continued to hold New York for 2 more years.
That's right. The war wasn't concluded till 83.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, we just, we sort of think the Battle of Yorktown was the end of the revolution.
Well, it's similar with the Civil War because everybody thinks the war ended at Appomattox, but the war went on for months out west.
Yeah.
So it's a similar kind of situation.
Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So that folks can get more information about your Virginia class by calling the Senior Center?
That's right, 974-6538. And if you're really interested, really, you can just come on by to the class and we'll get you all fixed up, get you all signed up. And that's tomorrow evening at 6 p.m. We have a few seats left in the room.
Good deal.
Yeah.
So we are talking about the Battle of Trevilian Station,
right,
which, unlike the Wilderness or Spotsylvania Courthouse or Chancellorsville, it's one of those battles that most folks, even here in Virginia, were not really familiar with. But it makes your list as one of the most significant battles of the Civil War.
It does. And it's on my list because it's actually the largest all-cavalry battle of the American Civil War, with probably about 7,000 Confederate cavalrymen and probably about 9,000 Federal cavalrymen. Now, the reason that this one is bigger than Brandy Station is number two. In the past, Brandy Station outside of Culpeper, and that was fought almost exactly a year earlier on June 9th, 1863, that one was always touted as the biggest cavalry battle. But it wasn't all cavalry because there were two brigades of Federal infantry on the Union side. And at the end, at the very end of the battle, some Confederate infantry showed up. So there's some infantry on the field, which changes the whole situation.
But now, there were more horses at Brandy Station.
There were more horses, but Trevilian Station comes in as the biggest all-cavalry battle. And if you're going to say the American Civil War, you might as well say the largest all-cavalry battle in all of the Western Hemisphere on the planet.
Holy cow.
Right.
So this is roughly 16,000 men on horseback.
That's right.
And this takes place in the summer in June of 1864.
So right.
Towards the final chapter of the war. And is this part of Grant's overland campaign to get to Richmond?
It is. And here's the way this whole thing kind of fell out. It was fought over 2 days, June 11th and 12th, 1864. Grant, following Cold Harbor, and when last we spoke, we were talking about the Battle of Cold Harbor.
Which took place just a few days before this.
That's right. He realizes that he is going to shift again to his left. But part of the problem of doing that, as he's so close to Richmond, is Confederate cavalry is all around him. It's on both of his flanks. It's trying to explore what's happening, what kind of forces he has on the flanks. And, of course, there are scouts and raiders and Confederate rangers all around his army, completely surrounding the army, getting information. So what does he want to do? He wants to make a big shift down to Petersburg, and he wants to cross the James River. And he needs to do that unencumbered by Confederate cavalry, unhampered by Confederate cavalry. So the way to do that is to send a large chunk of his Federal cavalry under Philip Sheridan. That, remember, he brought Philip Sheridan east with him to take over the cavalry of the Army of the Potomac. Actually, I don't know if we talked about that before, but Grant brought Sheridan with him just for that reason. So he sends off Sheridan, and the idea is if he sends off Sheridan on a raid, the Confederate cavalry, at least the majority of it, is going to have to follow him, and that draws the Confederate cavalry away from Robert E. Lee's army. Then Grant, and Meade and the Army of the Potomac can hopefully steal a march on Robert E. Lee and make it to the James, cross the James, and perhaps even capture Petersburg if Lee and his lieutenants aren't quick enough to react to this move.
So
that
tell
Grant
us,
has.
Was that ultimately successful?
So that stealing a march on Robert E. Lee was ultimately successful.
So this worked.
And so even though the battle is another Confederate victory, ultimately, strategically, you'd have to say it's a strategic victory because it drew the Confederate cavalry away from Lee, and Grant, and in effect, did steal a march on Robert E. Lee. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Now, tell me the significance of the cavalry in this war. I mean, you have a lot of men on horseback. Horses and mules were used to pull supplies around, but they're also using them to fight on, which we see a little bit in the Spanish-American War, too.
Right.
But is this the beginning of the end of the last hurrah of cavalry, of fighting
on
horses?
Cavalry was used for a while after this. Cavalry was in the Franco-Prussian War in 1870. There were some cavalry at the beginning of World War I that was used. And, you know, in some of the campaigns in the mountains, I know in India and in China, cavalry was used in World War II. So cavalry survived in the field until World War II,
gosh,
to my knowledge.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But this is the beginning of the end. I mean, this is the last large-scale use of cavalry, although there was cavalry in World War I.
In the Civil War, the guys who had the horses, were they provided by the government, or
great
they
question.
Brought their own?
Great
and
question.
Were these more of the well-to-do soldiers?
Great question. All of those are really great questions. In the Federal Army, the horses were supplied, the men. In the Confederate Army, the men supplied their own horses. So it's a completely different system. In the beginning of the Civil War, the cavalrymen in the Southern ranks tended to be more of the well-to-do young plantation masters. And they were, as you can imagine, magnificent horsemen. I mean, they used to tell stories about how some of the cavalrymen under Jeb Stuart, you know, could teach tricks to circus riders nowadays. I mean, these guys were accomplished horsemen, men who had ridden, you know, since they could walk, since they could stand. And so a lot of the Northerners who were city dwellers, you know, and joined the cavalry just because it sounded exciting, they actually had to be trained how to ride. And so that's one of the reasons that early on in the war, for the first couple of years, the Confederate riders, they rode circles around the Federal cavalrymen.
By this time,
the Federal cavalry, in fact, we marked the beginning of this at Brandy Station. The Federal cavalry was holding its own in the field against the Confederate riders. And by this time, too, a large number of them are armed with repeating carbines, which gives them a firepower advantage out on the battlefield.
The federal troops are.
Yeah, the federal troops are.
Well, I was going to ask
you,
that was my next question. If you just joined us, we're talking with Rick Britton. The topic for today is the Battle of Trevilian Station, June of 1864. I was going to ask you how they actually fought on horseback, because it's not like the Middle Ages where you charge at somebody with a big sword.
Right.
Or did they?
They did a little bit of everything. At Brandy Station, we saw a little bit of every, and we talked about this before, every kind of cavalry combat imaginable. So mounted forces with sabers charged against mounted forces with sabers, and they counterattacked. So they met in this big melee, this big mounted saber melee. So that's the closest thing to what you imagine as the combat among knights in the Middle Ages. And then there was a mounted assault against dismounted cavalry, and that was defended by carbine fire from the dismounted men. There was a dismounted assault against dismounted men, both fighting with carbines and pistols. So every kind of variation you can imagine. At Trevilian Station, we'll talk about it in just a moment, it was a lot different. It was mostly actually fought dismounted, even though it was all cavalrymen. On both sides, it was mostly fought dismounted.
So they rode to the battle and then jumped off
exactly,
their horses.
Exactly. And this shows you how the cavalry has evolved. By this part in the war, mostly the horse is a transportation means to get this man quickly to the battlefield where he dismounts. And basically, he's fighting as a dragoon. A dragoon was a mounted infantryman. He's armed as an infantryman with a shorter shoulder weapon than an infantryman, but a carbine or a two-banded Enfield, like a lot of the Confederates were armed with at this battle. So they're more like dragoons.
We're talking with historian Rick Britton about the Battle of Trevilian Station. We'll pick up where we left off in just a minute. A quick break for a Market Watch update. This is Charlottesville Right Now. Let's rejoin our conversation with historian Rick Britton. He's online at rickbritton.com. Today, the subject is the Battle of Trevilian Station, the largest all-cavalry battle that took place in the Western Hemisphere, really. And
that's
certainly
right.
During the Civil War. I wonder
right.
make sure I pronounce that right. It's cavalry.
Cavalry,
not
yeah.
cavalry.
A lot of
there is a
say,
difference, yeah.
A lot of people say cavalry.
Cavalry.
Cavalry is where Jesus was crucified.
Right, so this is
right.
cavalry.
Cavalry, yeah, C-A-V-A-L-R-Y.
Right.
Yeah.
We get emails, so we want to make sure we pronounce it right. So take us back to the June of 1864.
So the idea that Grant and Meade had is to send Philip Sheridan with about 9,000 federal horsemen to the West. And believe it or not, one of the ultimate goals of his was Gordonsville, but then Charlottesville. So the idea was to come here and tear up, completely destroy the railroad at Gordonsville and at Charlottesville. Now, the railroad that we're talking about here is the Virginia Central Railroad, the railroad that led from Stanton in the Shenandoah Valley and came up to Rockfish Gap and then through Crozet's tunnels to Charlottesville and then Gordonsville and points east. So by destroying the railroad at Trevilian Station, at Gordonsville, at Charlottesville, he would cut off the supply line. Foodstuffs coming from the Shenandoah Valley to Lee's army just northeast of Richmond. So that's what they're going after. And so they go up the North Anna River and then cross at a ford and end up at Clayton's store in Louisa County. Now we're gonna paint a little picture here, a word picture, so you get an idea of this battlefield. This is an extremely large battlefield. Imagine a triangle with each side being about 6 or 7 miles in length. The point of the triangle to the north, to the top of your map, is Clayton's store. So that's where Sheridan crossed, and just beyond that is the North Anna River. Sheridan crossed with all those 9,000 men and spent the night of the 10th of June at Clayton's store. So that's at the top of the triangle. The rightmost point of the triangle is the town of Louisa Courthouse itself in Louisa County. And the leftmost point of the triangle is Trevilian Station. So they're separated by 6 or 7 miles.
Which is where exactly?
It's in Louisa County.
Okay.
And it's along today's Route 33 going into Louisa. Now, that base going from Louisa to Trevilian Station is the road leading in those days, from Louisa, Trevilian's, then Gordonsville, and Charlottesville. But it's also, more importantly perhaps, paralleling that road is the Virginia Central Railroad. So he's headed to Trevilian Station to take that station, tear up the railroad, perhaps for miles on either side of Trevilian Station, because they had a way of doing it with that number of men. You could do it very quickly over a number of miles. Then head on to Gordonsville, do the same thing. Head on to Charlottesville, do the same thing. And, of course, at the same time, destroy the warehouses at those stations and any foodstuffs or any war material that might be stored there for the Confederacy. So that's his goal. So the morning of June 11th, we find Philip Sheridan at Clayton's store with those 9,000 men. Now, Robert E. Lee, of course, got wind of this. This is a large number and a very, very long column of cavalry, as you can imagine. And it's kicking up a lot of dust. It's a very dry week, so he's getting all kinds of word as to where these forces are going. So he dispatches not his chief of cavalry, because his chief of cavalry had just died. During the Cold Harbor campaign, a similar kind of raid was thrown against Richmond, and in that fight at Yellow Tavern, Jeb Stuart was mortally wounded. So Jeb Stuart's no longer around to help Robert E. Lee. So in the interim now, he's got somebody who is just handling it for him, and that's Wade Hampton. Wade Hampton was perhaps the most wealthy plantation owner in South Carolina prior to the war, and he's now a major general of cavalry. So his division goes to Trevilian Station. Then a division of cavalry under Lee's nephew, Fitzhugh Lee, goes to Louisa Courthouse. So that road from Louisa Courthouse to Clayton's store is fought over by Fitz Lee's men. And that road leading from Trevilian Station to Clayton's store is fought over by Wade Hampton's men. So there's a lot of heavily wooded terrain along those roads. The battles were fought back and forth by dismounted cavalrymen in those woods along those roads leading from Clayton's store to Louisa Courthouse.
You got thousands of guys
spread out
on horses, spread out all over Louisa County.
All over Louisa County.
Fighting on
huge
battlefield. Two hot summer days.
Now, fighting mostly dismounted. Now, the most interesting thing that happens is, in the middle of this fighting, a brigade under a guy from Michigan by the name of George Armstrong Custer breaks out of the middle of this and gets into the rear behind Hampton's division and captures his division train. So all of his baggage, all of his reserve ammunition, and several hundred Confederate prisoners were captured in the middle of this fight right near Trevilian Station by a brigade of Michigan troops under George Armstrong Custer. And all of a sudden now, the rest of the battle on this day, June 11th, swirls around Custer's men. But, you know, George Armstrong Custer was surrounded here for the first time in his military career. Of course, it was not going to be the last time that George Armstrong Custer was surrounded. He actually held out, and Philip Sheridan was able to drive Hampton's division back and relieve him. Then the very next day, Hampton and Fitz Lee retired to the west and actually dug in. The entire Confederate force of cavalry dug in along the road leading to Gordonsville and Charlottesville. And Philip Sheridan on June 12th attacked him, mostly with dismounted cavalry attacks using the firepower from those carbines I was telling you about. And the Confederates did an amazing job. The Confederate cavalrymen behind these ad hoc breastworks that they'd thrown up, and they were able to defeat Philip Sheridan. And so Sheridan pretty much won on the first day because he was able to drive Hampton back off the battlefield. But Hampton won on the second day because he was able to hold from Philip Sheridan's attacks. So tactically, Philip Sheridan left the battlefield after this. The casualties were about 1,000 men on either side. Sheridan left the battlefield and returned to Grant's forces. So tactically, you would say it's a Confederate victory. But strategically, he had drawn all of those cavalrymen away from Lee's army. And meanwhile, east of Richmond, Grant and Meade and the Army of the Potomac stole that march, got to the James River, crossed the James River on an incredibly long pontoon bridge, and were now threatening Petersburg.
Which was the goal anyway.
So a strategic victory, but a tactical defeat.
Did the horses die in this? I mean, do a lot of horses die?
A lot of horses die in the combat.
Well, you got 16,000 horses running around Louisa County.
Yeah, horses die, and horses get left on the battlefield. Horses get wounded, of course, and then the troopers have to kill them. So a lot of, from a raid like this, a lot of guys come back without their horses, right?
Yeah. So next week, we'll talk about the crater, which was just a few weeks later, July 30th, 1864, which is on your list. It appears to be the last Confederate victory.
I think that's right.
Rick Britton is a local author and historian. We are exploring the top 25 most significant battles of the U.S. Civil War that took place here in Virginia. Rick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.